Robert, this is my favorite time of year.
Really? This is, you're Manoush Zomorodi. I don't even know what you're doing here.
Robert,
this is Radiolab. I'm Robert Kovach. Chad Abumra normally is here.
I know.
You suddenly are in the room.
He's not here, so I wandered up.
Okay.
And I'm here. Well, sometimes I contribute to Radiolab.
Yes, you do.
I also host the show Note to Self here at WNYC.
More of the time you do that.
Most of the time I do that. But
yeah.
Guess what?
What?
My favorite time of the year, and I want to join you to do a little something.
Oh, of course we know.
Not that something, listeners. Get your head out of the gutter.
It's the generous thing.
It's the generous thing. That's right.
You know, people listening, this is the very, very end of the year, and your hearts are full, and you're full of graceful thoughts, generous thoughts.
Some of those thoughts might be tax deductible as well, actually. Well, we need you to support Radiolab for another year.
Yeah.
And it's easy to do that. You can go to radiolab.org/donate or your favorite way to donate, Robert, which is to text.
Yes, I love texting. And I just am trying to remember exactly what the nature of the text is.
Well, if you're in the United States, you can whip out your phone. Yep. Open up the messaging app. Type in the word Radiolab to the number 69866. Oh, look, a little form popped up.
Oh, my gosh.
You're on your way to donating in a matter of seconds.
Oh, my gosh. It's so fast, so easy, and so simple that I am almost going to add a few more dollars to my generous moment.
Cool.
Thank you.
And thank you for doing that, Robert.
You're welcome.
It was so easy. And there's a warm, even more warm, cozy feeling that just surrounded me.
Now for the rest of our show.
Oh, wait, you're listening.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radiolab.
Radiolab.
From
WNYC.
See?
Yep.
Hi, I'm Robert Krulwich.
And I'm Latif Nasser.
This is Radiolab, and today we're going to do something completely upside down.
And inside out.
Yes.
It's a sports story.
Sort of, but like none you've ever heard. And therefore, we found a reporter who is a sports reporter like none you've ever heard.
Yeah.
I've been to a gym lately.
Mike Pesca. He's the host of The Gist podcast put out by Slate, formerly of NPR, still sometimes works with NPR. And now he's here telling the story to us.
Yeah.
And how did you even first hear about this? Were you covering it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So
this is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
I was covering the 2012 Olympics for NPR.
Good morning.
Hello.
And
I declare open the Games of London.
The stories of the Olympics, you try to find your own stories that are obscure. But if there's a big story, you chase it. So in those Olympics.
So for you, what were the most notable achievements in the first week of the Games?
Well, it's history of the best kind.
Michael Phelps breaking the all-time record, obviously.
So in over 100 years, nobody's won as many medals at the Olympic Games.
And everyone knew that Bolt and his record-setting quest in the 100 would be huge. But then this badminton story pops up, and everyone rushes to figure out what the heck's going on with badminton.
Because the 2012 London Olympics badminton tournament, just, it took this somewhat obscure sport and it morphed it into this bizarro thought experiment about competition and integrity and what it means to win.
Okay.
But mostly, I think that the player.
Although, to be fair, Mike, he jumped on this story for very personal reasons.
As a New Yorker, I say a lot of words and they're mispronounced and the NPR audience would jump on them, but I always can say the N in badminton and get a lot of plaudits. So I'm attracted to badminton.
Oh,
well, what's the wrong way to say badminton?
Most people say badminton.
Badminton. Like you're talking to some handwear at wintertime.
Well, like you're chastising a playful cat.
Right.
Badminton. Bad.
I see.
Good. And then also, you know, you and I probably think of badminton as this backyard, fun, silly game. But according to Mike,
no,
this is anything but.
It has nothing to do with the badminton you play in your backyard. It's much faster than you think it would possibly look.
You get these players flying all over the court, stretching, reaching, diving.
The skill of the competitors is, you know, readily apparent.
This is pulsating badminton.
a shuttlecock is a funny thing and perhaps not as impressive a thing as a tennis ball, but it looks, you know, a lot like tennis. And there's a lot of tension.
Severe pressure.
And there's a lot of grunting. And it totally seems like every bit of a legitimate and highly skilled sport.
Wait, I'm going to start. Okay, so Robert, so you haven't seen this yet, but I would like to show you something. Okay, this is, it's an ad. Yeah, this is the game that is at the center of this whole story.
Women's doubles group A.
Women's doubles badminton. It is not a medal round. It's in the group play stage. There's a huge crowd here. Like, the place is packed.
Yeah.
Please welcome, representing the People's Republic of China, Wang Xiaoli and Yu Yang.
So these two teams come out. You got China.
Yellow and red uniforms, yellow shoes.
So here come...
versus Korea.
Mm-hmm. Purple and white.
Yeah, and let's just skip ahead here. All right, so here we go. Game on. This is the first serve.
So the Korean pair...
Korean serve. So the Korean player flicks her wrist. The shuttlecock goes over the net. China returns.
Right into the net.
That was it. That was the whole thing.
Oh, that was just a...
Okay. All right. So Korea, second serve. And Chinese return. And same thing.
The net again.
Yeah. So the service is turned over. Now the Chinese are serving.
Okay.
China, Korea, China...
Into the net again.
Yeah.
This is not exactly scintillating, I just got to tell you.
Just watch this next point. So the Korean player serves it.
Yeah.
It sails over the net, and then it goes, and the Chinese player clearly is right there. She has it. She then winds up just a slight bit, like you could see, it's like she has this deep ingrained muscle memory from years of doing this. She winds up, she's about to hit it, and then she stops. And the shuttlecock just plunks onto the floor, inbounds, point to Korea. And then, tellingly, she looks back at the back corner of the court where her coach is sitting.
They both are.
Yeah.
This is a fix. They're fixing this. Like,
well,
this is...
Yes. But
there have been plenty of occasions where one side wants to lose, and it ain't hard to lose. And the more important thing is, it ain't hard to get away with it.
Usually, you wouldn't even notice it.
You know, it's the difference between a couple serves over the line, a couple balls into the net. But
in this case, as the match goes on, you start to realize...
That's a very lethargic start from both teams.
The Korean players seem to be trying to lose too.
They're serving faults.
Yes, they've got to get into the rally, of course.
Why would everybody be trying to lose? Like, both sides?
Well, it's actually a strategy. Because the way the tournament is laid out, both these teams are going to be moving on to the medal rounds. But whoever wins this game is going to have to play another Chinese team, a really strong team.
I see.
And whoever loses is going to play a way easier Danish team. So both teams are hoping to lose.
Yeah. And it is the rare instance where you have both sides incentivized to lose that you get something that should be scored by Spike Jones. It's a little bit of a prisoner's dilemma, right? Either side could lose, but when both want to lose...
It becomes this surreal waiting game.
Right.
You know, who's going to crack first and score a point?
And so...
You got the best players in the world who just start hitting the shuttlecock out of bounds.
They're surfing fault after fault.
Faulting on purpose and...
They're just hitting the ball straight in the net.
Hitting the shuttlecock into the net.
I'm sorry, you know, it's blindingly obvious what's going on.
And, you know...
They're both trying to lose.
Sometimes they hit it below the net.
And that is unforgivable.
They're hitting it straight into the ground.
All but tripping over their own shoelaces purposefully.
And so what you get is...
Serve, up, all into the net.
Point
serve,
after
up,
point of just terrible badminton. And it just devolves into this absurd, repetitive, crazy-making lose-a-thon.
This is an absolute disgrace.
It's so obviously lame. I mean, this is not sport.
But it is kind of a sport because, and this is why I really love it, at a certain point, these two teams have to start competing with each other to lose.
What?
Let me play you this point. So China serves it. Korea hits it back, but it's going way out of bounds. Now, in a normal world, China would obviously let that fall so that they could take the point. But they lunge to save it, right? And they're hitting it back. Now, Korea then, they are like, no, you know what? We're pretty sure we want it out of bounds. They hit it in the opposite direction, even further out of bounds. So now China goes to save it once again, but they don't get there in time. So the point goes to China, which China actually didn't want, and the Koreans wanted the whole time.
So what are you saying then?
Well, it's like they invented a whole new sport, which is the exact opposite of badminton. It is photo-negative badminton. But then, towards the end of the first set,
tournament referee has been called for.
Out comes the referee.
And here comes Torsten Berg.
Hello, Torsten speaking.
Hi, how are you? Torsten Berg was the head Olympic badminton referee who got that call.
And I also heard the spectators boo, so I went to watch. It looked pretty awful. This was not right.
And the referee is calling the players together.
And told them that they were not playing seriously. And they were making a very serious mistake, and they played stupid and said, no, we're playing, we're trying our best.
그런 일이 처음이어서 유공 선수들은 그냥 끝까지 그렇게 하더라고요.
We were actually able to get in touch with
코치님이 말씀
three of the four players in that match. Both Korean players.
여자 복식 국가대표 정경은이고
정경은 and
뛰고 있는 김하나입니다.
Kim Hana. And also one of the Chinese players.
大家好,我是王小李.
Wang Xiaoli. And
当时可能就是对于我,
and Wang Xiaoli told me they were trying to lose in that match.
But what we didn't expect, South Korea would do the same thing.
And as for the Koreans, Jung Kyung-un said that they too were trying to lose, at least during certain moments in the game. But when the crowd started to boo,
처음 블랙카드란
and the ref came out, her partner Kim Hana said that
so I was surprised and embarrassed.
They were just scared.
We just wanted to get out of the court as soon as possible.
So Torsten walks off the court.
They went on court again.
And then the second serve after Torsten walks off the court, nothing but net. So for the next few points, it does not get much better.
No, it didn't look like world-class badminton at all.
So the set comes to an end. Korea wins the set. And while the players are waiting on the sidelines,
here comes the tournament referee again.
Torsten comes back onto the court. He walks up to the players, and he pulls out of his pocket, almost subtly, and shows to the players this black card.
The black card. Which means disqualification.
This is absolutely extraordinary. He has given both teams a black card, or has he threatened them with a black card? I'm really not terribly sure. The players have returned to court.
It was now that they should play or they would be in deep. Sorry, maybe I shouldn't say
that. No,
the black card says that pretty clearly.
Black card was out, and I told them in very clear words and very seriously that in order to help themselves, they better play now.
The Korean player, Jung Kyung-un,
우린 우리대로 하자고.
Said that she turned to her partner.
And I told her, they're them and we are we, so
경기를 했죠.
Let's just play and do our best.
The second set starts, and pretty quick,
因为他不是裁判过来警告嘛, 然后也就是,
China's Wang Xiaoli told me,
出示了一些,
both sides changed a little bit.
Instead of just serving into the net,
things start to get better.
A rally.
They would get the rally going.
But then, as the points kept coming, you started to notice, like,
they were playing very slowly.
There's something still really off here.
They were not hitting the ball very hard.
出示牌了嘛, 然后就想说,
now, the Korean team wouldn't admit this, but Wang Xiaoli said that both teams
didn't change the basic fact.
改变太多.
Were still trying to lose. Which, I have to say, is exactly what it looks like when you watch it. Because for the rest of the match, you get a bunch of these points where, like, where just they'll lob it super high, you know, as if to say, hey, smash it down on us, take your point.
or they will, you know, hit it out of bounds and then facepalm. Just, you know, practice their swing after they missed one, just to see, say, oh, you know, my mechanics are off. I just got to just practice this a few more times. Because it's like we've entered a whole third iteration of this game where it's like they're not just trying to lose, they're trying to
cover up badminton.
Cover up badminton. You're trying to lose, but you're trying to look like you're trying to win.
I don't think they're fooling anybody here.
No, no.
So finally, after 20 long minutes of this, the Korean team loses the match by winning it.
Tonight has left me with a very nasty taste in the mouth. Tonight was not sport. It was a disgrace. Good night.
그냥 약간 조금 기분이 좋지 않은.
So all four players walked off the court, and Kim Ha Na told me
it was not a pleasant winning at all.
That her parents were in the audience that day, and afterwards they asked her what happened.
What happened, and why do you have to get the boos from the audiences and etc. And I was sad and felt defeated, so I didn't even want to talk to my mom, so I remember I just went to the hotel and had rest.
And the next morning at 8 o'clock, all four pairs, in fact, were disqualified according to the disciplinary regulations of the Badminton World Federation.
Which has a rule on the books that you can be disqualified for failing to use your best efforts.
And the same evening, they were on the plane home.
They were just thrown out of the Olympics.
Scandal at the Olympics.
This whole to-do about the badminton players.
Everyone was talking about some losers.
Shuttlecocks were going out.
Tippy-tapping the shuttlecock into the net.
Like a five-year-old in the backyard picnic.
It was downright humiliating.
It was just sad that they were committing suicide in that tournament.
At that time, the punishment hit me quite hard. I was very sad, and I felt helpless.
I was perplexed and didn't know what happened. We just cried.
So what? So then, what happened to the? Were the players like? What happened to them?
Well, all four of them did keep playing badminton professionally after this. Jung Kyung Eun from Korea even went on to win the bronze in Rio. But at the time, this was a brutal punishment for all of them.
Well, but you know, they did something wrong. This wasn't right, right?
I question whether it's even unethical. I think it's ethical in a way what they did.
Really, what the players did?
I do. I think it's ethical.
How so?
Okay. So is the definition of ethics in sports to win? Sure, without cheating, yes. Does that mean to win every point? No, not necessarily. You know, in baseball, there's the thing called the intentional walk.
Sure.
In football, a team will take a safety instead of punting and letting the other team score a touchdown. So this is a calculation where a point here or there is not as important as the whole, and the whole is the game. So, okay, let's move back. Let's pan out a little more. I think an individual game is often lost. Look, we're not going to put our good starter here. We're going to manage the lineup because the goal is to win the championship. And the thing to remember about these players is if what we want is players who are hyper-competitive and actually want to win at all costs, that's exactly why they were losing so badly, because they wanted to win the overall championship at all costs. And the Badminton Federation had a set of rules that all but guaranteed that this would happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's stupid to have an event where people are trying to lose if that event is a sporting event, especially at the apex of, you know, the only time people care about badminton. It seems really dumb.
So this is Chuck Klosterman. We called him in because he writes a lot about sports and also because he wrote the Ethicist column for the New York Times Magazine.
Now, is this some kind of tragedy? Well, it's not. I guess unless badminton's really important to you, then it probably is.
Well, in this case, I think the thing that people got really upset about is this idea of the Olympic ideal.
In the name of all the competitors, I promise that we shall take part in the Olympic Games.
The athlete's oath.
In the true spirit of sportsmanship, for the glory of the sport and the honor of our teams.
To transcend in the way that as a superb athlete you're transcending your humanity, but then also as like this representative of your country, and to I think it did poke a lot of people. Like a lot of people did seemingly get kind of upset about
it. Well, yeah. I mean, for some reason it is disturbing to see athletes failing on purpose. Mm. That just it seems to kind of like tap into some
feels immoral somehow.
Tonight has left me with a very nasty taste of
yes, like I don't know if not trying in a sporting event is a moral question, but it feels that way when you see it happen.
That is unforgivable.
Here again, one of the interesting things about sports is that we watch these adults playing multi-million dollar games, but they're the same games that like a 6-year-old or 7-year-old plays. So when you have a 7-year-old kid, you would say, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. It doesn't matter what happens. Just play hard. You don't have to succeed. It's the trying that matters. So when you see people at the highest level not trying, it sort of wrecks the entire idea of why we play sports at all. You know, why if you're at a playground and two kids race across the playground to see who can get to the swing faster or whatever, like that's like a biological thing. Maybe we are biologically driven to compete. So that's the baseline expectation of what we have of these badminton players, that they will try to compete.
But it seems to me there's an opportunity here for true athleticism in a kind of topsy-turvy
way. Flip it
and reverse it and see if you can do that as well as you do the other one.
I mean, sports only work one way, though. They don't work both ways. I mean, it would be like going to your wife and saying, like, okay, you say you really love me, prove it by hating me in a creative way. Or to go to a great piano player and say, like, if you're so awesome at playing piano, bang your fist against the keys in a way that I will be sickened by.
But if we take it out of matters of the heart and put it back on the field, what would be the most radical solution that you could imagine if your desire was to convincingly and astonishingly athletically lose the fight?
I suppose if they were both trying to do it in the most convincing way, it would be. That was not really the case here.
Well, I guess they never confronted it. How do you lose on purpose if the other side's also trying to lose on purpose? And I'm trying to think. There are some sports. So in football, let's say in American football, let's say both sides wanted to lose. Well, here's how the sport would go. You can't make the other team score, but you can score a safety on yourself. So the quarterback would get the ball and start running towards his own end zone. And then there'd be a jailbreak by the defense to tackle the quarterback before he got to overtake him. Baseball is hard. You could hit the batter. That would be an interesting game.
Yeah, what?
What about darts? Instead of aiming at the dartboard, just turning around and aiming at your opponent or yourself.
So that's like the baseball strategy.
How about the sport of bodybuilding? Think about the implications.
Bodybuilding. I would win that.
Would you?
I think I would win
that. I see like a Will Ferrell movie out of this.
Yes, that's what I've been thinking. Yeah. The loser.
Like the loser.
Right, yeah. We get to a point, our team, all right, this is what we need. You got to go out there and lose.
No, and then there's a loser on the other team who's also very good.
Yeah, the two losers and are eyeing each other down.
Yeah.
Two
losers.
Yeah. And then
you can hear more of Mike Pesca on his podcast, The Gist, more of Chuck Klosterman in his latest book, But What If We're Wrong? Big thanks to all the players who talked to us and to those who helped us get those interviews, Lei Lee, Mikyung Kim, Yuni Kartika.
Thanks to Aparna Nancharla, who came in and helped us puzzle this whole match out. And in addition, a special thanks to Gracia Pauly. Gracia was on the Indonesian badminton team in those same Olympics. And an hour after the match we featured, she faced off against a different Korean team. All four players in that match were also disqualified for not using their best efforts to win. She really helped us understand what it was like to be in that situation.
This story was produced by Matt Kilty and Annie McEwen and Latif Nasser. I'm Robert Krulwich.
And I'm Latif Nasser.
And I guess that ends the game at this point.
Go to the next message, press 6.
Hi, it's Mike. I'm going to do this. It's possible that even though this is the fifth time I've said David Gebel wrong, but I'm going to do it once, and I'm going to do it with an intro of myself, and here goes. Hi, this is Mike Pesca. here to tell you that Radiolab is produced by Jad Abumrad. Dylan Keefe is our director of sound design. Soren Wheeler is senior editor. Jamie York is our senior producer. Our staff includes Simon Adler, Brenna Farrell, David Gabel, Matt Kielty, Robert Krolwich, Annie McEwen, Latif Nasser, Melissa O'Donnell, Ariane Wack, and Molly Webster, with help from Tracy Hunt, Nijar Fatali, Phoebe Wang, Katie Ferguson, Alexandra Lee Young, W. Harry Fortuna, and Persia Verlin. Our fact checkers are Eva Dasher and Michelle Harris. Thanks for listening.
End of message.
Here's an idea I have. There's an old riddle, and it goes like this. A king talks to his two sons, two princes, and he says, here's what we're going to do. Get those horses out of the stable. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to jump on your horses and ride to the city gate. Whichever horse gets to the city gate last, you're going to inherit the fortune. Maybe he's a crazy king. So the two princes look at each other. They both think, and then they jump on their horses and they ride fast as they can. Why?
I don't know.
To rein in their horses at the very last minute, jump off the horses and say, whoa, and then wait until the other one, I don't know.
Are they planning on just removing a section of the gate and then just smashing it up against the other horse?
Yeah. No, that's terrible.
No. Okay.
Would you like the answer?
What is the answer?
They jumped on each other's horse.
Oh.
They jumped on the other brother's horse. Maybe.
Wait, let me just think about that.
That was fun.
They jumped
was great.
On the other's horse, of course.
He said whichever horse gets there last. So how that...